I'm Nancy Rivas. I'm a licensed clinical psychologist from Meyer Clinic. I didn't bring any cards, so I just put all that information up there if you'd like it. This topic of disciplining special needs kids, it's a challenging topic. It's challenging to do, and it's also challenging to write about or talk about because there's such a huge diversity of what special needs is. It's kind of like, okay, well, we could, you know, there's 12 different ones or whatever. So what I decided to do was to talk about some general principles that would sort of help guide you in the right direction. And when I'm thinking about, would this be a good intervention for this child, how do I evaluate that? What's going to be more useful or less useful? So I want to kind of give you some of those general principles, and then we will leave time to hear specific questions, which I probably think all of you might have coming to this. That is my guess. So that's kind of our plan. So first let's pray, and then we'll get into it, okay? Lord Jesus, we thank you for your presence with us, for your grace towards us, for your love for us and for our children, and we ask that your Holy Spirit would just lead and guide and direct and minister during this time, Lord, so that we can receive what we need from you. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, so first we're actually going to go back before discipline because I think there are some things that need to be in place before you even have a chance of dealing with discipline. And so I want to talk about what those are first. Four foundational ideas. So the number one thing, which sometimes people don't think about specifically related to their children or how to handle a situation with their child, is to seek God. Or you might go, well, duh, I know that, Nancy. Okay, well, that's good. I hope you do. But lots of times we, you know, ask our parents and our best friends and read the books, and we don't think to really ask God and seek God and stop and say, now, what does the scripture say about this? And if I pray and seek God about this, where does he lead me? Okay, so I think that needs to be a key reminder, because the bottom line is you can go to all the experts in all the books and they don't know what your child needs. Okay, God knows that. So he's the best one to ask. There's all kinds of great helpful promises, like Jesus gently leads those that are with young, ask and it shall be given, seek and you will find, so forth. So don't forget that. Okay, number one. Number two is take care of yourself. This one might be a little bit harder, but you have to be filled up in order to have something to give. And so a lot of times as parents, really a lot of times our tendency is to put the children first. But the truth is, if you do this all the time, all your children are going to have is a burned out parent, and that is not going to do them any good. And so, you know, even when Jesus said, love your neighbor as yourself, he is assuming you are loving yourself first, okay? So you can't like skip over that part. And lots of people really try to do that and it doesn't work. It's sort of like your checkbook, okay? You can't just keep writing checks without ever putting anything in. And so you need to do that with your own emotional and spiritual energy as well, so that you have something to give to your children. If you don't know, try to figure out what fills you up. You know, when you come away from a person or a place or an activity, do you feel refreshed? Do you feel stronger and happier and calmer? Or do you feel drained? You know, we're going to have both of those, but you have to have some of the first ones. You have to have some where you come away stronger and refreshed. So hobbies, prayer time, time with friends, really, frankly, it doesn't actually matter what it is, as long as you come away more able to give. And one of the things a lot of times that can do this specifically with regard to kids with special needs is talking with parents who have similar children in similar situations. That can be a real lifesaver. Okay, number three, making it a top priority to maintain a positive connection with your child. Again, in a way this sounds kind of obvious, but this can easily become lost depending on your stress level and what else is going on. And so spending time with them, just getting to know who they are, not trying to do anything to them. Like usually we're trying to like make them eat, get them dressed. like we're always like doing something to them. You know, like so much of parenting time is functional. And it's important to have some time that's not like that, that's just hanging out and listening and enjoying them. So a couple of practical ways to do this. One practical way is to listen with the purpose of understanding. And a lot of times, you know, we feel so much responsibility to impart everything they need to know that a lot of times when we're listening for, what do I need to correct them on? What do I need to teach them? What do they need to do better next time? And we're not listening to hear really the heart of the child. And they really know the difference between those two kinds of listening. So to make an effort to do this, you have to sort of discipline yourself to say, okay, I'm listening to understand. And then instead of adding anything to the conversation, you just reflect back to them. And you say, okay, so what you're saying is you had a really hard day at school, and that's why you want to be alone in your room, and you really don't want your brother in there with you. Is that right? Yes, gosh darn it. You know, and they'll tell you yes or no if you've gotten it right. But so just saying what you heard and just listening for, did I really understand all that? Is there anything else you think I should know? That is a huge difference. And so doing that deliberately really builds that positive connection. That's a practical way to give them attention that they will feel and receive. Another practical way to do this is to have some one-on-one time with them and where you enter into their world, okay? So again, typically we're like, okay, we're in our world. We've got our schedule. We've got the things that need to be done today. And we're like, okay, you join me, like, because right now it's chore time. So you do your chore, right? And that's fine. But in this way, what we do is we say, okay, I'm here to spend time with you. What would you like to do? Now, believe me, this is not always easy because I have a son who all he wants to do is like have fights with his action figures. And I'm like, oh God, help me, help me, help me. Because this is like mind-numbingly dull for me, okay? But I've done it. It's a big effort. But the truth is, though, he loves that. And if for me to understand him, I need to make an effort. Now, I don't frankly claim to understand yet really exactly what the appeal of that is. However, entering in, being there with him, participating to the best of my ability, and reflecting back, the excitement that he has about it, though, says to him that even though it's not my favorite thing, I value you and what you care about, and I'm willing to enter into that world. And so sometimes you have to set aside your own preferences, but there really is a payoff in terms of the relationship, and it doesn't have to be that long. 20 minutes for a kid is a good chunk of time that, you know, makes a difference to them, and they notice. And, you know, I think about this. One of the big biblical principles that I think relates so much to parenting that I try to come back to is, you know, in 1 John, it says, we love because he first loved us. So, you know, God loved us when we were unlovable, and he gave us the ability to love him, right? And that's the same way it works with kids. We love them way before they can love us, and we have to keep pouring that in. And eventually, it does come back. But we have to keep pouring in that first love, you know, for a long time. And so this is a real practical way to do that for kids. Sometimes I find that depending on the child and the diagnosis, like when I'm, you know, at work as a psychologist and I have a family come in, sometimes I find that the sense of positive connection and caring and enjoyment can be really strongly eroded or almost gone sometimes. And so when that's the case, I know it's going to be much, much harder for us to get anywhere with the supposed problem that we're working on because there's kind of like no foundation. And so to make really any headway with those sorts of things, we need to have this in place first. On the other hand, kids are so, so, so thirsty for this. Sometimes all you have to do is say, just play with them by yourself for 20 minutes a day and don't answer the phone and, you know, have the other kids with the other parent or whatever. And just doing that will sometimes turn around some of the behavior because they just need that to be filled up and to have that sense of like that you like me. So that can make a big difference. And it's more fun than taking away their favorite toy. For you as the parent, it's a pretty enjoyable way to add to the discipline or whatever you're trying to get accomplished. Okay, so that's the first three. The fourth thing that's sort of like pre-discipline, as you may have already gathered, one of the things that I want to emphasize today and remind you is that usually when people say the word discipline, they think about punishment or consequences, but really what the word means is teaching. Okay, so the goal of discipline is to equip your children to function. What do they need to know? What do they need to learn how to do? And so it's really important not to lose sight of this, because if somebody asked me, so my kid hit his sister, what should I do? What consequence should I give? They'll be like, well, should I take away the video games or should I send him to his room? okay? For instance, well, that's not exactly the question to ask. The question to ask is, what does my child need to learn in this situation? So if your son became frustrated and hit his sister, then what he needs to learn is, how can I be angry but not sin? Okay, because he hit his sister because he was angry. So that becomes the question. And then you realize, okay, so it's not what consequence should I give. The question is, how can I help my child learn to be angry and not sin? So then you ask yourself, okay, will sending him to his room help him learn that? Will taking away the video games help him learn that? What would help him learn that best? And that is the question that you want to consider. Okay, because then you're actually getting somewhere. I mean, you can give kind of what is to me like a random consequence. And in some sense, you've sent a message that that wasn't okay at least. So that's a little bit of information. But as far as helping the child learn what to do or how to be in the future, it might not have helped so much. Okay, so that's one of the most important things to keep in mind, is really it's about learning and teaching. And that, of course, goes back to the relationship and how positive it is, because I'm sure you can remember your teachers and how your relationship with a certain teacher might have made a certain subject more or less enjoyable to learn, right? So it's all tied up together. So when you have these four things in place, you're seeking God, you're taking care of yourself, you're maintaining a positive relationship, and you're thinking about how to help your child learn, now we can talk, you know, specifically about special needs and discipline. So the first thing, in my experience, that often comes up with this is sort of the issue of individuality. Usually if you make some adjustment for individuality or some special need, your kids will complain, that's not fair. And so that's probably true. But what they don't understand is that fair and identical are not the same thing. Okay, so it may be true that it's not identical, but that doesn't mean it's really not fair. So in case any of you are wondering, it is okay as the parent to have sort of different strategies and even different standards for your different kids, if that is appropriate. It doesn't make sense, and this is, you know, something a child can understand. You know, if you have a 2-year-old and a 10-year-old, it doesn't make sense to give them the same breakfast, does it? Okay, they're not complaining. That's not fair. You know, I need this much oatmeal, you know, or whatever. No, of course you do it differently because they're different kids. They're different sizes. They have different needs. And it's the same thing with other things. So what is fair is giving every child what they need to the best extent that you can. That's what's fair. Okay, it doesn't mean you have to do everything identical for every child. It's hard enough without trying to have a sort of one size fits all, because it never will fit, and then you'll just all be frustrated. Okay, so for instance, again, thinking about what do they need to learn and what do we need to teach. Your introverted child does not need to learn to quietly amuse herself, right? Your extroverted child does not need to learn to say hi to strangers. But they each may need to learn the other one, right? The introverted child might need help learning how to say hi to people they don't know. And the extroverted child may well need help learning to sit and amuse themselves quietly. So that's okay. You need to teach each one what they need to know. And this is really, you know, one of the biggest parenting challenges. It's not like math, where you learn your addition facts, and then whenever you need to add, you just do it. You learn one thing, you get it down, you do it. No. With kids, you know, first of all, each kid is different, and then they keep changing with each one of their developmental stages. So it's never the same twice, and it keeps you on your toes. So if that doesn't make you, you know, ready to pray, I don't know what will. That's part of the challenge. So now there are, of course, many things that all kids need to learn, okay? Like, for instance, so the goal of your teaching and your discipline will be the same, but your methods can vary, okay? So the teaching goals are going to be the same in many cases because, again, like we said before, it's about what do they need to know to function as an adult. Some of these things are going to be the same for everyone. And they're based on your values as well. So you want the kids to end up at the same destination, but they might get there in different ways. So for instance, you might have the goal that your children will be able to get along with other people. Okay? But again, if you have someone who's born a social butterfly, they don't need much help with that. All you have to do is like go to the grocery store and walk your dog, and they'll have 3 new friends by the end of the day. Right? You didn't really teach much, okay? You're just living your life. Now, you still have to teach that child maybe how to apologize when she hurts someone, how to say please and thank you. I mean, you do still do something, but it's real easy, okay? However, if you have another child that has Asperger's disorder, then learning how to get along with people is going to be a much longer, slower, harder road. This person might need to be told, number one, look at someone's eyes. Number two, smile. Number three, say hi. And might need to practice that hundreds of times over the course of a couple years. And so, again, you're still heading towards the same goal, but you need to use different methods and you need to allow for time and strategies that vary according to what the child needs, okay? So in order to help your child learn, obviously understanding where they're coming from is really important. And so I really always tell parents, you have to be educated about whatever condition, disability, you know, whatever your child is dealing with, it really, really helps to learn about that. Because when you know that, when you know enough about it to go, oh, this behavior is related to that, then you are in a much better position to know how to handle it. Okay, a great, very common example of this is ADHD. Okay, so if you have a child with ADHD, they're losing and forgetting their homework, that is a classic ADHD problem and symptom, okay? So you need to handle that in a way that takes into account how ADHD brains work and not do sort of your typical thing, because that isn't going to work, okay? On the other hand, if you have a child with ADHD and they're having trouble staying in a sleepover, well, that's not about ADHD, so you know, you don't have to, that's sort of not the issue. So then you can sort of take that off the table and sort of go through what you would regularly. But the key part is for you knowing enough to make the distinction, because then you're in a so much better place where you have more resources and more equipment to know what's a good strategy. So your kid with ADHD still needs to learn to keep track of homework, okay? But they're going to do it at a different pace. They're going to need different support. They're going to need different strategies than your sort of OCD child, okay? So you still want them both to get there, but again, timetable support strategies can all vary. Okay, so when you have an actual problem behavior, the first thing is to step back and think about it. And this is the issue of being proactive versus reactive. Think about what exactly is the problem? Why is it a problem? What do you want your child to learn? Is it going to matter in a month? Is it going to matter in a year? Is it going to matter in 20 years? Really? And this is part of the place where we have to look at ourselves, honestly, because sometimes the problem is really with us. Like, for instance, if you just realized you were late and so you want your 3-year-old to get her shoes on in 4 minutes and then you're really mad that she doesn't do that, well, you know, this is the kind of thing that realistically drives us adults crazy, maybe in the moment or on an everyday basis, but it's not actually the kid's problem, right? We were late or we're having unrealistic expectations. And actually, is it really going to matter if we're 10 or 15 minutes late to wherever? Probably not that much, realistically. So in a case like that, we need to let it go. Or we need to make an adjustment on our end, like giving ourselves more time, not institute a big program to teach a 3-year-old to be faster with her shoes, right? That's not really the issue, okay? So, okay, let's say you've gotten past that step and you've established, okay, it's not me, it really is the kid, okay? Then you need to step back and observe, okay? And again, being, you know, proactive versus reactive. Reactive is when you don't think much, your kid does something and you react. So you grab something away for them, or you say, well, you're going to your room as soon as we get home, or whatever, you know, kind of woof, comes out. Okay? Now, believe me, we all do this. I've done this plenty of times. That is a normal human reaction. You didn't think about it for more than, maybe 10 seconds. But the problem with this is it never really gets you that far. In fact, sometimes you end up taking steps backwards, depending on what came out of your mouth, okay? So it's better to step back and think when you're not in the middle of it. You know, if you have an incident like that and you end up feeling regretful or feeling like, well, that didn't go anywhere, then when you actually have a chance to sit and think and talk to your spouse, you need to take a step back and kind of look at the big picture. If you can get other people's perspectives who know your child, like, you know, your child's friend's mother or your spouse or whoever, absolutely more. My philosophy is the more information, the better. And so, you know, sort of ask around, see what people think. Sometimes even siblings make really insightful observations about what's going on. And consider all of the elements, right, of the environment, things like schedule, sleeping, eating, the amount of stimulation, the amount of stress, the amount of exercise they're getting, the amount of unconditional love time that they have. All of these things kind of play into the behavior that comes out. And many times, if you recognize that that's one of the issues, just adjusting that can provide the child with enough of a boost that they will do what they already know is kind of the right thing. Okay. Sleep especially, it's sort of one of my little pet peeves, I guess. Our society is very sleep deprived. The children are very sleep deprived. The adults are very sleep deprived. And really, children, one of the ways that you know if a child has enough sleep is if they just wake up. Okay, they wake up when they have enough sleep. And so if you are always having to, okay, teenagers accepted, but your elementary age children, okay, if you're having to drag them out of bed, they are probably not getting enough sleep. And that makes a big difference behaviorally and academically. I actually had a child who was having a lot of trouble getting to school in the morning, like crying and like just big, big hassles going to school. And they just moved his bedtime back an hour and problem disappeared. So that can make a big difference. So, and remember how when we talked about you being filled up and having something to give to your child and having some balance between what's, you know, building you up and what's draining you, the same thing applies for your child. And the reason why I say this, you know, depending on the special needs, it really, you have to discern, again, what for your child, okay, from their perspective, they're like 7 or 8 or 10 or whatever, from their perspective, what is really hard and draining to them? What is stressful to them? And what is a great day to them, okay? And many kids with special needs, school is so hard. It is so hard, and it is so long. And if you can imagine, I hope you're not in this situation, some people are, but if you can imagine as an adult, you know, having a job that you hated, that you most of the time you're there, you feel frustrated or you feel stupid, and you can't quit and you can't go get another job. It's going to stretch on endlessly for years in front of you. It's pretty miserable. Those kids need understanding and support to help them cope with that. They need a break when they get home from school. They need to not do their homework the first thing, okay? And, you know, they need you to understand that. That can help them cope with it. And it's not a small thing for them. So we need to acknowledge that that is real stress. A lot of times as adults, we kind of feel like, you're 8. What do you have to be stressed about? Give me a break. You know. But again, that's from our perspective. From their perspective, they do have stress. They do have things that seem overwhelming and painful to them. And we need to, you know, understand where they're coming from so that we can really meet them where they are. Because, see, this might not sound related to discipline, but see, if we don't, then they have to find a way to show us how bad they feel and how stressed they are. And that's when you have, quote unquote, discipline problems. Okay, right, exactly. And the other thing they need is other settings in which to build a positive identity and to feel competent. Okay, because for kids for whom school is hard, they don't get those two things, which are two really, really big needs. So you need to find some other way that they can get it, whether it's sports or music or, you know, you can brainstorm that. But they have to have some place where they feel like they're good at something and they are building a positive identity. Okay, so let's talk about some general teaching methods that you can use as a jumping off point. Again, you have to use your creativity, but first principle is internalization, okay? So this is how internalization works. First, the parent gives external input to the child repeatedly over time, and then eventually it soaks in whether they like it or not, and they've got it inside them, and they don't need the external input anymore. So for instance, say brushing teeth, okay? So you got your one-year-old who maybe has some teeth. And so you kind of rub their gums and brush their teeth as best you can. As they get older, maybe they're 2 or 3, they want to do it themselves. You humor them. You let them kind of do it themselves. And then you have to really brush their teeth to actually get them clean. And this goes on, you know, for years, really, until you can trust them with, you know, brushing their teeth. I mean, still, probably when they're 7 or 8, you probably say, don't forget to brush your teeth before bed, and you might occasionally check to see that they actually brush their teeth, but it's mostly on them by then. So it's a gradual process, and, you know, they've heard it literally like thousands of times. I mean, if you do it every day for all those years, they've heard it thousands of times. And so even when you're not there, if they go to a sleepover, they go to grandma's or whatever, you know, when they're getting ready for bed, they're going to hear in their head, it's time to brush your teeth. And the reason why they hear that in their head is because you've said it hundreds of times for all those years. So that's the process of internalization. And that is one of the basic ways that kids learn. Okay, and so a lot of times you can replicate that process with whatever skill you're wanting them to learn. Where at first you put most of the input, but then after enough time you sort of gradually step back and they start doing it themselves because it's soaked in. So related to this, one of the most common questions that I get from parents about special needs and behavior is, well, if my child has this diagnosis or this issue, then does that mean they can't help it? And if they can't help it, then how can I discipline them? Like, that doesn't seem right. And it's true that doesn't seem right, because none of us would want to be punished for something we have no control over. But this is, again, where it comes down to the learning versus punishment. It is not helpful necessarily to punish a child for something they don't have a lot of control over. It is helpful and appropriate to teach them to gain control over it. Okay, and that is usually the strategy, I think, that is useful. For instance, probably most common example of this is if you have a child with ADHD or bipolar disorder, then these children are very emotionally reactive. So this little thing happens and they have this huge meltdown. And that behavior is related to those diagnoses. And there is probably some true sense in which they are not 100% in control of that. Okay, so that is correct. But if we ask ourselves again, what does my child need to learn in this situation? They need to learn to gain as much control over that as they can. Okay, that is what will actually be helpful to them. So how can we teach them this? Well, usually we sort of take this internalization idea and we do the same thing where we break it down as to what would we like the child to do. We would like the child to think about, well, how much of a big deal is this? We would like the child to maybe remove themselves from the trigger, maybe breathe deeply, you know. So what happens is we break it down as how would we like them to calm themselves down, and then we teach them. And the first time, you know, or first 100 times, I should say, at the beginning, we're providing 100% of the input, okay? We're providing the external structure, just like you get the toothbrush and the toothpaste and do the kids' teeth at the beginning. We do the same thing at the beginning when they haven't got anything. But if we stick to that and we administer that kind of like every time it happens, then eventually, like the toothbrushing, it kind of sinks in. And so when they have that, I'm getting really upset feeling, they hear in their head you saying, step back, take a breath. Why? Because you've said it 500 times before that or whatever. And so that same process you can apply to a lot of different things. And so this type of child can learn, some control and some self-soothing skills and whatever. And so it's not that that there's no response or that we just say, oh, well, if they can't control it, I guess we'll just all suffer, you know, but we help them get there. We teach them how to get there. Okay. So we provide the external input that they need. Now, if you did something like, okay, every time, you know, you just sit this child down and say, you know what, this reaction is inappropriate. It's unnecessary. We expect better, and so every time you do this, you're going to lose your video games for a week. What's going to happen? They're going to have a meltdown, lose their video games, and then have a meltdown, lose their video games, and have a meltdown, lose their video games, and you'll be going nowhere fast, right? Because that's just sort of a random punishment that has nothing to do with what they need to learn and what's kind of the problem in the situation. The problem in the situation is that, number one, the child's miserable, and number two, they're harming all their relationships by making everyone else miserable too. So those are the things that are important, and that's why it needs to be learned. And so when you think about it that way, then you realize, well, taking away video games, what's that going to do? But having some connection between kind of what needs to be learned and what you do, that's good. Oh, and so one thing that's a common consequence that I think does have some good connection is time out or putting your child in their room, because a lot of times really the problem with the problem behaviors is that other people don't like them. You know, that either you're actually sinning against someone or you're just being really annoying and nobody wants to play with you that way, okay? And so, you know, biblically speaking, so the value is on maintaining relationships and caring about other people. And so the natural consequence is, well, if you act like this, nobody wants to be with you. So that is a fairly close connection to say, you know what, if this is what you do, then you need to be by yourself because we need to be protected from it. Like, no one enjoys that. Okay, so that, I think there is a good connection there. Another really good principle to use, a biblical principle, is making restitution, okay, or making amends. So, you know, in the Old Testament, it talks about if you, harm your neighbor's ox in some way, then you have to replace their ox, okay? It's the same idea where if your child breaks someone else's toy, maybe they have to pay for the toy, so they have to replace it. Or if your one child is mean to the other child, then maybe he needs to serve that child for half an hour and do whatever they ask within reason. So that you find a way that they're really building up the relationship and sort of undoing as much as you can some of the harm that was done, okay? Because again, that's building in teaching them the right way. So instead of being mean, you practice being kind for 30 minutes. That's much more, again, connected to learning. It's much more effective than, well, you can't play on the computer today. Like, that's not related to being mean to your sibling, you know? So making amends or restitution is often a really good principle to use. Another teaching tool I want to point out is questions. Questions make people think. And although we want our kids to think, most of the time we spend just telling them what to think, not actually asking them to think for themselves. So for instance, if you're going to teach your child to clean their room, okay, you could just tell them how, okay, and that would be fine. But you could also ask them, before you tell them how, you could ask them things like, why do you think we clean rooms? Why do you think that's important? What have you seen me and your dad do when we clean rooms? What do we usually do? Where do you think the clothes should be? What will happen if someone tries to walk in this room with the lights out? Where do we keep the toys? You know, and so you can have a discussion like that, and it's often very enlightening what you'll hear, either on the good side or the bad side. Either way, you never know. That's one of the reasons why it's always good to ask questions, because you might think you know the answers, but not all the time. But from this discussion, you might still come up with the same thing you would have told them before. You know, make the bed, put the books on the shelves, and the dirty clothes in the hamper. That's our definition of a clean room, okay? You know, and they need that step by step. But again, if you ask them the questions to help them figure it out and come up with it, they'll be more invested in doing it. They will have learned from the thought process and not just sort of taking the instruction from on high. And so that's the same thing. A lot of times what you can do with these, you know, these SOS calls that you get, like, Mom, she took my toy. Dad, I forgot my water bottle. Like, whatever it is, all those kind of things. You don't have to just always give the answer. You can say, well, what do you think we could do? What do you think would help? You know, because that's putting it on them. Let's see your problem solving muscles get built. You know, that's an opportunity for them to figure things out for themselves. And that's one of the things that we don't realize, is that when we always just tell them the answer or fix it, we're kind of taking from them an opportunity where they could figure it out themselves. And that's partly how they learn to become independent and learn how to solve problems without us, is by us making them do that as much as we can. Okay, last thing I will mention before specific questions is another classic discipline strategy that I'm sure you're familiar with is a star chart. Okay, so if you go the whole day without whatever, then we put a star on, and then at the end of the week, if you have 7 stars, then we go to McDonald's or buy this or whatever. Okay, well, this could be of limited usefulness, okay? My own opinion is that this is useful when you have a short-term problem where, you know, I mean, we all know, even for adults, if you're trying to change a habit, the beginning is the hardest part, right? Because you have this old habit, and you're trying to remember to do the new habit. And so something like this can provide a little boost of, ooh, that's interesting, that's fun, to sort of help the child put in the effort when they really need it at the beginning. And if you're, you know, if things go as you hope, then in a short time, because of, you know, that helps them do it at the beginning, and then doing it at the beginning kind of builds the habit, and then it gets easier to roll, and you can kind of remove the thing, and then you're all good. And it sort of gets them over the hump Okay. And when you're dealing with behaviors like, you know, staying in your own bed at night, 2 and 3 year olds or potty training, like it's pretty good for those because those are behaviors that will easily settle into what they should be if you just get them over the hump. But with older kids and other bigger problems, it's not so good because then you get this attitude, hey, mom, I made my bed. What do I get? You know, or, you know, stuff like that. It's like, no. That's not the way it works. You know, that's too much unlike the real world. And it creates this sort of bizarre entitlement mentality that really is not going to help them. You know, for a while, I don't know why, because we never use Star Charge or anything. But for a while, my son would say, like, if I would say, hey, you want to go grocery shopping? And he'd say, well, what would I get? And I'm like, food. You know, I mean, like, yeah, that's what you're going to get. I mean, so this is the way the real world works. And that's, I mean, personally, like a lot of people pay their kids for chores and that's totally fine. I'm not against it. But at my house, it's like, you'll get paid what I get paid. Okay. You know, you clean your room, you get a clean room. I clean a room, I get a clean room. I don't get 10 bucks, you know. So, I mean, you sort of have to think about how these things transfer and whether you want to kind of go down that road. So, specific questions. Well, one thing you could do, since she likes playing or doing whatever she's doing, you know, you could tell her that since she's been having this problem, it seems like she doesn't notice when she needs to go to the bathroom, and so you're going to help her. So, like, every hour or every half hour, you're going to walk her. She's going to sit on the toilet for 10 minutes to see if she has to go. Frankly, it's not to be training her. It's to disrupt her play. So she goes, forget it, Mom. I can do this myself. I mean, that's really more the reason. I mean, it'll work both ways, which is part of the beauty of it. But if it's really just because she's sort of gotten in a bad habit, then that should annoy her enough from her usual life that she'll go, yeah, thanks. I can do this. Yeah. Well, you know, do you have a sense of, is he just resisting the timeout because, like, he just doesn't want to lose the time? He's mad he got in trouble? Or, you know, some kids like that, like you're thinking ADHD or sensory, the more stimulation, meaning you, you know, coming over and saying, you did this wrong, you need to sit in timeout, like that is sort of like, whoa, you know what I mean? It sort of overstimulates them. If you feel like that's the case, then you might want to deal with it differently and purposely try not to do that because, you know, then you sort of are rolling down a hill where your response and his response, you know what I mean? So you might try doing it differently. You know, he's old enough. Of course, this depends on exactly what he did wrong. But, you know, you don't have to have the intervention right then. You know, if you want to make a point about something, you can just verbally say, you know, that breaks our rule, there's going to be a consequence, but you could do it later if you needed to, you know what I mean? You could also step back and sit down, like with him and your husband and whatever, sometime when he's not upset and say, we've been having a problem with time out, you know, and sort of talk about it with him and see what you get as far as his understanding of what's that about. Like, do you feel like he has remorse? Do you feel like sometimes kids react really big like that because they're actually ashamed. And because they really do have a very strong conscience and they're sort of so mortified, you know what I mean? There's a lot of, like, especially firstborn kids, they're very perfectionistic and they're sort of mortified that they did anything wrong at all. And they're already beating themselves up inside. And that's a whole different ballgame than if it's really more the sensory, you know, overload or whatever. So I guess, I know I'm not giving you an exact answer, but I would try to, you know, sort of test your hypotheses about where's that coming from, because that'll help you address what it is. Yes. Yeah. Well, sometimes because I when they're in that, you know, sort of hyper out of control state, yeah. If they can handle the input, this is the big if that I can't tell you for your kid. But sometimes, like some, well, I actually worked in an early childhood classroom where we had a kid like that. And what we would do, we had a big braided rug. We would roll him up in the rug, which I know sounds really crazy if you haven't read about this kind of thing. But, like, the deep pressure on his joints and just being physically contained, like, he loved that. And he did learn to say, you're asking what could he do for himself? He did learn to say, I need to be a hot dog. Like, that's what we called it, playing hot dog, you know what I mean? But he started to sense when he needed that containment so he could do it earlier. And so if you can find some kind of input that does does help calm him. He probably does already sense his need for it. And he's the flopping on the bed and stuff is him trying. But a lot of times that pressure, like between couch pillows or something, a lot of times that is very calming, a tight space.
Yeah, but we're trying to
vary. Well, and again, I don't know if it's more stimulating to have you there or less. And that's another thing you can see. Does he calm down better if you leave, or does he calm down better if you stay with him? Because if you can stay with him, you can say, hit my hands instead. You know what I mean? You can give him an alternative. And that is your door in also to say, gosh, buddy, can you think of anything that might help you next time? Or you can say, I was thinking of trying this. Does that sound okay to you? You know what I mean? So that there's a sense of we are working on this problem together. It's great if, you know, because it is trial and error to some extent, you know.
Can I ask what do you say and what do you not say? So that it's
kind of... Yeah, there's no easy answer to that. I mean, you have to decide what is necessary to get through this situation. I mean, that's how I would decide. You know, family needs a lot more education, understanding, and expectations than strangers do. But poor strangers do need warning, I think. like really, you know, and for your child's sake, not so much, I'm not saying poor them, but I'm saying it's a setup for it to be harder for both of them if they don't have some clue. The problem is that you can tell them this child has Asperger's, this child, whatever. Like, you need to actually describe what you would expect to see and what they could do or not do. You know what I mean? Because these words, these labels that you all know a lot about mean nothing to most people.
But yeah. You would say yes.
I would say yes because I think the harm from too much information is less harm than the harm from not enough information. You know what I mean? That's my leaning. But yeah, the other thing, you know, I was thinking about the autism issue. And obviously there's a wide spectrum of autism severity and degrees. And, you know, you're talking about that lack of emotional motivation that is the core, really, for most people. And I think, you know, I don't really know, and I don't think science really knows. I think this is one of those things that only God knows. But my leaning, you know, just, I guess, from a biblical worldview would be it's in there somewhere, yeah, to some extent. But we can't see it very well. It doesn't come out very easily. And I would encourage you to sort of look for that. You may see some expressions of, say, affection towards you, or some expressions of preferring to be at home in some way. Like, it may be very sort of stunted, but some bits of connection with you guys. And, you know, notice that and use that to the extent that you can. You know what I mean? Don't dismiss it because of the label. Because I think, you know, whatever is there, you want to kind of try to pull on that, you know, even though, again, our expectations would not be the same. But, yeah, I don't want to totally, like, just say, yeah, that's never going to happen, you know, because I think those little bits that are there, again, you want to notice and pull on and kind of help grow them to the extent that could happen, you know. All righty.